Moncrief on News Talk.
We are joined by Declan Buckley and this year's recipient of Tanner of the Year, Barbara Scully.
Brown girl in the ring.
Natural tan. It didn't come out of no bobble.
You have a tan. You haven't even left the country.
I haven't.
You have a tan.
That requires commitment, though.
It was down in Cork. Yeah.
Do you know, it's a different universe.
That's true. It's a different world. Yeah.
No, I mean, seriously, it's very exotic.
I don't think there was any days that I actually lay out in the sun.
Yeah.
This was walking. And, but like.
And would you not use SPF?
I would use SPF, yeah, but you still get a tan.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, I would use SPF. I mean, yeah.
Can you have any factor one? Anyway, first question. I'm part of a friend group of six girls and we've all been very close since our school days. We're now in our early 30s. Last year, the first of the group became pregnant, so there was great excitement. She had her baby girl a few weeks ago and called her Molly. Now, that's before anyone texts in, that's not the real real name. The problem is, one of the other girls in the group for years has spoken about how if she ever had a baby girl, she'll call her Molly. The name choice has called World War III in the group. I'm of the opinion that you can't claim a name. The other friend is not pregnant, nor is she even in a relationship. The point I made to the group is that even if she does have children in the future, she might have all boys. Therefore, I don't think she can lay claim to a name. The group has now divided in two. The girl whose name robbed is genuinely hurt, and I feel there's no going back. At a time when one of our friends has just had our first baby, I think the focus should be elsewhere. What do you think?
I think you're right.
Yes.
I think the focus should be elsewhere.
Yeah,
like, I mean, this is the most stupid argument and stupid thing to fall out over. I mean, if you're going to fall out with your close friend group, they've all been close since school. If you're going to fall out with them over something big and important, not over something stupid. I mean, you know, yeah, the person who wrote the letter is absolutely right. You cannot copyright a name and say, that's my name. I thought of it first, so I'm having that name and none of the rest of you can have that name. That's crazy. Especially since the one who has claimed the name isn't even pregnant. So, you know, I mean, it is ridiculous. There isn't a quota of Mollies in the world.
No, you can have
as many Mollies as you like.
Not enough Molly in the world.
Yeah.
As many Mollies as you like. And the thing is that even if the one who supposedly wanted the name and isn't pregnant, but if she does get pregnant and she does have a girl child and she does call her Molly, the chances of the two Molly children being friends is very, very low, and the chances of them both ending up in the same school is very low, but the chances of the imaginary Molly going to school in a class where there's loads of Mollies is actually much higher. So it's ridiculous argument.
It is ridiculous. Oh, no, they might foresee their future is that they're all still hanging out in best buds when their kids are grown up and their kids are all friends. You know what?
And they're all that going, you're Molly and my Molly. Where's my Molly gone?
Oh my God. Oh no, I brought your Molly home by accident. I'm so sorry. With hilarious results.
And also that kind of nonsense works for about the first couple of years when you have a baby and maybe a toddler. Oh, we'll all get together. We'll bring all the kids. We'll go to the playground. Oh, and then your kids develop their own personalities and friends and, you know, interests. And they're not like, if you say, now we're going over to Sandra's house and you can play with her Molly, and they're going, oh no, not again. I don't like that Molly.
Yeah.
I'm not going. And so that's all ridiculous. So yeah, all the friends need to take a cup of calm the feck down, and they should all wise up. It's ridiculous.
This is, people have nothing to be worried about.
Nothing.
Yeah.
No problems.
I agree with you 100% because I come from the same kind of skeptical kind of place that, you know, if you want Molly in your life, everybody should have Molly.
Okay, we're going down a different road now.
Whereas, I also think that in a group of friends, that if you have one friend who you think is going to be the kind of person who's a bit precious about, you know, I'm going to have this venue for my wedding, and then this, and you're all talking about it. So if you're having the conversations about it and you're sharing your dreams and hopes, I think there's something about
somebody hijacking them.
Yeah, and do you not know your friend well enough that they'd be kind of, they'd get the hump over it, that you could just at least have that chat in advance? That's my only little thing that I'm going.
Yeah.
If your friend is the kind of person that's going to throw a gasket over you taking her wedding venue or her baby name or whatever, then, you know, you kind of walked into that one and you're kind of partly culpable, not percentage culpable, not even half percent, but half of the problem. But I think at the end of the day, there are people who really value their kind of dreams and hopes in that way. And they want, I have a plan for my name. I'm going to have two kids. One day.
It's not like she now can't call her child Molly. She can still call her child Molly when the child ever, if the child ever
comes
along.
If she wants to. And presuming a lot of things, A, she gets a partner to have a baby with, and B, that partner
agrees
to her choice of the name Molly. Yeah.
Exactly. So like, yeah, there's a load of...
No, of course, I get that. But I think what often can happen then is that people have these visions in their head of their future, and to see somebody else, you know, taking that path or whatever, can be infuriating on a real subliminal, childish-like way. And if you don't know your friend is like that from everything else that they do,
yeah,
you know, you kind of walked into one, yeah, there yourself. That's my only thing. Apart from that, though, I totally agree. I agree you shouldn't... Like, back in when I was a kid in school, there were like about 52 Seans in my class.
And how many
80
Declans
Patricks,
were there?
Only one Declan. But I wouldn't let them, yeah, have... All the Declans had to be in the B class.
I'm sure we've two Seans working on this show.
No, I don't know who,
exactly,
I'm talking to half the time.
No, yeah.
So, like people come, especially like English people, like go, you're Sean as well? Or is this like some sort
different
of Irish
Sean
joke? You know?
We have to take the name Sean when we become part of this cult.
I have to say, I was the only Barbara. I think not only in my class, in my entire school.
Wow.
Which is great.
Okay, that's a nice bit of distinction.
Yeah. Indeed.
Hi, Barbara and Declan. They should just grow the hell up. Yeah, fuck them. Hi, Barbara and Declan. I'm particularly interested in getting Barbara's take on this question as a female of a similar age to my wife.
Another round one.
My
obviously.
Wife and I have a joint Google account. There's your first mistake. As a result, her search history comes up on my phone. The other night, I could see that she had Googled porn. And not just your bog-standard porn, but videos containing threesomes and BDSM. We have been married for over 30 years, and I've never seen or heard this side of her in my life. It's after freaking me out for many reasons. I did not fall in love with a sex addict like this, and I also think it's inappropriate for a woman to watch this type of porn. It's clearly aimed at men. I'm disgusted, but I don't know how to approach it with my wife. I want this habit to end immediately. I want her to treat our relationship and sex life with the same respect as I do. Can Barbara help?
No.
No. Barbara enjoys a good thrashing as much as any other woman.
Barbara, can you help?
Barbara is sitting here and I'm tempted to get up and walk out of the studio and find this fella to give him a slap. And not in a BDSM kind of a way, just a regular slap across the head. Like, I'll deal with the main issue in a minute. But the first thing is, where the hell is he going with saying, I think it's inappropriate for women to watch this kind of porn? And why is he disgusted? Like, how does he not know that women nowadays can actually do whatever the hell they want to do and don't need anybody's permission? And that can include watching porn if that's what they want to do.
It's giving very kind of Handmaid's Tale vibes, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Especially
absolutely.
He seems to kind of know his porn.
Yeah.
Because
he
was like, this is bog standard porn.
It was,
we all know what that's like.
That's okay. Yeah. That's because he's a man.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, contrary to what Sean just said, I'm not an expert in this area, but he is right in saying that most porn is aimed at men and made from a male perspective. And in fact, I do know that most women who do watch porn, straight women, tend to watch lesbian porn because it feels more comfortable and there's less, you know, there's watching porn for a woman can be quite unsettling because you can, you know, there's this undercurrent very often of violence or women being coerced into doing things they maybe don't particularly want to do. And it can be quite disturbing.
No, but there is... Like, it's a very small amount, but there are female directors who make porn specifically for women.
Google feminist porn.
Yeah, feminist porn. Yeah.
But, I mean, the other thing is his wife isn't a sex addict. But the other thing that worries me is that when he says that he wants her to treat our relationship and sex life with the same respect as I do. Now, that's a big, like, what? What exactly does that mean? And, you know, this is September. It's the month very often when we talk about reset. So I'm wondering, does his sex life maybe need a bit of a reset? I mean, clearly, you know, his wife likes to have maybe an orgasm every so often. So maybe he needs to sit down with his wife and have a bit of a conversation. And maybe they could both maybe indulge in a little bit of porn to maybe add a little bit of spice that maybe that she feels isn't there at the moment. Now, it may not stop her watching porn and he needs to get over that. But, you know, it may also be that he needs to stop being so rigid in his views. And maybe
it's weird because presumably if they have a joint Google account, he knows everything she Googles. And then so this has just happened recently. And he didn't ask himself, why did that happen?
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, my God, she's a sex addict. That was the first thing he...
Maybe she just made a mistake in the first time. She didn't use her sleeper phone.
Yeah,
exactly,
yeah. That's
what
I would suspect.
Lesson learned there.
Go dark mode. Go into dark mode. Oh, she's like, oh no. Johnny's going to know. I've been on the dark web again. Look, the bit that annoys me the most about this is the kind of proprietor attitude he has over his lovely, you know, his lovely Victorian lady wife, whose reputation is, you know, and her decency is being sullied by the fact that she's seeing these disgraceful images, as opposed to what you suggested there, Barbara, is that she's like a woman whose sexuality actually goes beyond their relationship, because, you know, your identity and your sexuality can't be contained within your like a relationship that you have, because your brain can't be contained by a relationship
about stuff
that you have. So you can have, it's like in the same way that a man can be holding the hand of his wife walking down the road and he can turn and see another attractive woman. That is outside the relationship. His thoughts have strayed. Whether that's infidelity or whatever is my whole point. Because the reality of it is it can't be, because your brain is often uncontrollable in that way.
Yeah.
So, and but also this, I'm not denying this woman her own agency. I'm not saying this accidentally happened.
Yeah.
I'm saying that her sexuality and her curiosity and her own understanding of her own body, all that stuff comes into her own domain. He doesn't own that.
Yeah.
And to act like he does is really
creepy.
Awful. Yeah. That made me really uncomfortable. So from that point of view, I think he's the one who needs to look at himself. Yes, maybe a conversation with his wife, but it's also, I don't want to say it's none of his business, but it kind of is almost on the, it's none of his business.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I said. It, you know, I think he should have a conversation with his wife because there's a possibility, and I'm saying that from the hints that he's given us in the letter, that he might be extremely conservative and that might, you know, be part of their sex life as well. But I am not suggesting that you should talk to your wife and make sure she's satisfied so she stops watching sex or watching
porn. It's reminding me of that Late Late Show interview years and years ago where Gay Byrne was on, and there was a woman going on about it, and she was like, she's kind of from like a religious right wing mentality, and she was saying about, this is my husband and I know we mightn't have good sex at all, but I love him. And it's that kind of weird mentality of people kind of thinking that sex and relationships aren't the same, and that you can have a relationship that's fine and functioning even if it doesn't actually fulfill you. When in fact, exploring that whole idea is really important, that you should be able to engage with your, you know, your partner, your lover, your wife, your husband, about what you're interested in or what kind of, you know.
And there's also the thing of that your sexual, what's the word? You know, your
libido.
Your libido can be different. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. At different points in your life as well. But I think, you know, I love the way he says, I'd like to take get Barbara's take on this, as they're of a similar age. I kind of feel that there's an unwritten, like, you should be gone well beyond this kind of nonsense.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Oh my God.
Absolutely.
And that's also another thing that, you know, no, you don't go beyond that kind of thing, mister.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he needs...
It just kind of like, I mean, I know that there are, like, you've pointed out a lot of the problems that there are around pornography. And again, as with everything to do with humanity, when there's a kind of a thought process or an instinct or a need, nefarious forces can often come in and exploit need and distort it in some way. But I think that when, you know, on the opposite end, we have these kind of pearl clutchers and, you know, religious minded
people.
That's
not a euphemism, sure. It's not.
No, it's not actual. No, it's just a myth.
Could be, actually. Boom, boom. Well done. Yeah. Somebody says porn is the only fully inclusive type of media. Every gender, ability, and race is catered for in porn. It's like Denmark or something. Right, for right.
I'll have to,
Started getting worried if she Googles pegging or rusty trombone.
Ah, stop it. This is more of a stop.
I'm just looking at you, Barbara, because you know.
I know.
You might be delighted if she found out and we'll explain after.
It's just, I hate when you do this to me. I thought I was being really keeping up with everything, and now you've
My wife and I have four grown up daughters who are close in age. 5 years ago, we'd no grandchildren. Now we have 10, which is wonderful. The only caveat to this is since our daughters went back to work, we've become full-time childminders. We mind at least two grandchildren on any given weekday, which means we don't have any time for ourselves. When the evening comes, we're just too tired to do anything. My wife says that I'm a grumpy old man who's being selfish, but this is not how I pictured retirement. We've already reared our children. All I want is a bit of peace and quiet. I confronted our daughters about the situation and told them that they need to make alternate arrangements for childcare. My wife tells me she will continue to mind the grandkids in our house because childcare is just too expensive. It was at its worst during the summer when all the kids were off school, but it settled a small bit. However, I'm not spending my days doing school drop-offs and pick-ups. I don't want to get to the stage where I dread seeing my grandchildren. Honestly, I am genuinely contemplating moving out. Am I in the wrong?
No.
No, you're not.
No, I mean, I don't think he is either.
I'd kind of slow up on the moving out bit, but you're not in the wrong. And this is, I think he makes a very valid point, and I think this is a huge issue. And I think it's one that many grandparents are reluctant to talk about because most grandparents adore their grandchildren, and the relationship between a grandparent and a grandchild is a really, really special one.
And they're aware of the economic and social situation out there where childcare is really expensive and people's lifestyles often require both parents to work.
Yeah, exactly. And that is the problem, is the way that we have set the bloody world up. But it is not fair that grandparents should be expected to step into the space where affordable, correct, accessible childcare belongs, or where much more flexible, family-friendly, child-friendly work practices should live.
Yeah,
I mean, in the last couple of weeks, I was remarking on this on social media. My social media feed has been full of people going, oh, here's little Johnny going off to school, you know, starting school, or here's Mary going into first year now in secondary school. Oh my God. And every single time I saw one of those, I thought, oh, thanks be to God, I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a long road. And what I would say to this man is that the way he's thinking is not selfish. It is entirely reasonable. And I remember, I mean, I don't have this situation because my grandchildren live on the other side of the world. But if they all arrived home tomorrow, I think I would do from the get-go what my mother did to me. And I was a single parent living at home, 25, when I had my daughter. And I remember my mother, who had just set up her own business, saying to me, now listen, give you all the support we can. I'll give you all the backup I can, but I'm not doing full-time childcare. And I remember at the time being a bit like, well, that's really mean. You know, I thought you would be more like you would do that. And but she was actually right. It took me a little while to come to grips with it, but she was actually right. And I would say exactly the same thing. I think grandparents can play a role, should they wish to, in the day that little Johnny is sick and he can't go to the creche, or there's something on, you know, that she needs to step in, or the granddad or granny needs to step into the breach when something else falls out. That's fine. My mother did a lot of babysitting. That's fine in the evening. That's fine if that's what you want to do. But I think this relentless, because looking after kids is really tough work.
I think there has to be a difference between like obligation and desire, in the sense that I think like this guy here and his wife more so very clearly want to be involved in their grandkids and they love them and all that kind of stuff. And that kind of bond and that relationship is very special, in that a lot of grandparents don't get to have that opportunity or chance, whatever. So, but parking that aside, is that there's loads of other things that people can do at that stage in their lives, and they've probably been waiting for those kind of retirement years where they can just be footloose and fancy free. And to have this thing kind of put on top of them as an obligation because of societal expectations or because of, you know, economic...
Yeah. Yeah, because I can see that. I can see the grandmother's point of view
as
well.
Gone, because well, she's gone there. They can't afford this. And, and their quality of life. If they have to spend all that money on childcare, that they won't be able to have a nice house or whatever it is, or they're you know, wherever else the money would go. I do think that there are a lot of grandparents who have made the choice that they are willing to step up, and as long as they're able, and it isn't creating some kind of, you know, negative scenario. This guy is, for him, it's a negative thing. And he's gone, enough.
And I think that's interesting, because I wonder, was his wife a woman who stayed at home and brought up her own children herself? Because I see that in that there are women who stepped off a career ladder, stayed at home, brought up their own children, get to the stage now where their children are adults and having their own children, and they become a grandparent. And because society still tells women of a certain age, you're kind of on the scrap heap. You're too old to do anything useful or to be out there doing whatever you want. So here you go. Here's a way of you being useful and needed, and that women have this natural kind of like, oh, I'm now needed again and I'm doing something really useful. Because it's very hard if you've been at home, as I was for 10 years, to decide you want to resurrect something of your career. It's really difficult if you're 50 plus. I hope it's getting easier, but it's still quite difficult. So I think that feeds into the women kind of taking up the rein and going, OK, I can do this. But it is exhausting and it is relentless. And in this case, this man doesn't want his house full of kids all day. Yeah. Yeah. And I get that.
And he might
totally
be a little bit older than his wife. And he also just goes, it's down to energy levels. There does come a point, especially as people live longer, there's a chance that, you know, your grandparents are around longer. But that doesn't mean they have the energy, the capacity, or sometimes the interest in being that enmeshed in your
life. I mean, to give him advice, I would definitely suggest that he first of all needs to talk to the wife. Because again, like a lot of these things, she's calling him a grumpy old man because he's obviously going, oh God, not again. Yeah. Like, oh, Gina, they're again, there's toys all over the floor and, you know, a fellow with the bike and yada, yada, yada. So she's hearing it on that level. But I think what's missing then is an in-depth conversation, you know, some evening where he just sits down and says, listen, I really don't like this. I really wish we could have some time on our own or time to travel or time to do whatever.
Yeah, because I'm sure they must have made plans.
Exactly.
Hopefully they did.
She's directing all of her energies towards that job, maybe he feels a bit neglected as well.
But also, it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. So in other words, if he could get the wife to row back a little bit and say, look, let's offer to do a Monday and a Wednesday and a Friday, but keep Tuesday and Thursday just for ourselves. Something like that, I think, would be quite reasonable to say to the kids, we're not abandoning you completely, but, you know, we do need to have a little bit of time for yourself. Because the other thing, as you get older, you have to watch your health. And, it's stressful looking after kids. I think they need to sit down and have a chat. But I think it is. And I mean, you know, I do have a slight issue with adult children thinking their parents will mind the kids for nothing.
Yeah. A few people have texted and met on exactly that point as well.
Yeah. And that's not really fair. Like, you know what I mean? That's really not fair.
Time is money, Barbara.
Time is money.
My sister-in-law takes advantage of my parents because she knows they won't say no when they're asked to look after her four kids. Then they are wrecked every evening, just like that man that asked the question. I don't think he's being selfish. He raised his own kids and now it's time for himself. People shouldn't have kids if they can't look after them themselves.
Well, I mean,
one would have kids then, or very few people. Siobhan says, I sympathise with the grandfather. There's a lot for the two of them. I'm on his side. Appreciate childcare is so expensive, but minding children 5 days a week is exhausting, even for a younger couple.
It is.
The adult children need to source childcare and pay for it. I doubt the parents are being paid. Still, though, a lot of commentary about the question we got in about the porn.
Great.
Someone says, it is interesting that every action from a woman is always considered with innocent intentions. Most wives are complaining about their husbands and the addiction risks of porn. No part of your conversation is questioning why this woman is not talking to her partner about their sexual life. Yes, this fella sounds like he has control issues and needs a therapist, but also this would not be met with so much positive commentary if the roles were flipped.
I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true either.
I think that's true. In fact, you know, I specifically mentioned that sometimes your own sexuality and your own identity is actually separate from your husband. So whether you mention it to them or not isn't some kind of betrayal. It isn't. And they only mentioned one incident of her checking BDSM on Google. That's not an addiction.
That's what I said.
That's just one.
Addiction is a different thing. Yeah.
Somebody else says, if I've learned anything in my 40 years, it's that women leave hints. If they tell you anything straight, it means they are angry. She wants to try some mad sex stuff. She's not a porn addict. She wants you to do the stuff she watches.
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Is that from a man?
I'm guessing it's a man.
Sounds like a man.
Yeah.
Why isn't that guy screaming for joy? World of opportunity for him with his wife.
Yeah.
Obviously, he didn't see it that way.
He needs the full video.
He has a respectful sex life.
I had a friend whose straight-laced wife read 50 Shades of Grey for a laugh. She ended up leaving him for another man who was into all of that. Oh. And now she's very high up in the Irish BDSM society.
She's very high up in the
Irish... I didn't know they had a society,
hierarchy. So she's chairperson.
Do they have, like, votes and everything?
And how do they vote?
Everybody cracked their whips for who they want to be the president. God, that's fascinating. Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.